It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Standing beneath the portrait of the woman he vanquished in the election, President Trump welcomed the first tour group since his inauguration to the White House.
We're apart, everybody. We're apart.
The president is anxious to get back on track after the latest blow-up in the Russia controversy and his accusations of wiretapping that left even the president's staff scratching their heads as to what he was talking about. The move to repeal and replace Obamacare is President Trump's first big legislative initiative. This afternoon, he met with the congressional team that will whip the Republican votes to get it through the House.
I'm proud to support the replacement plan released by the House of Representatives and encouraged by members of both parties. I think really that we're going to have something that's going to be much more understood and much more popular than people can even imagine.
But the White House is scrambling to quell fierce opposition from conservative Republicans who say it's still Obamacare, just in a different form. The president's HHS secretary left to defend the tax credit that replaces the Obamacare subsidy for low-income earners.
The central part of it, which is tax credits, which they see as yet another entitlement, very similar to the entitlement of Obamacare, they're different in form. Yet how do you convince them, since it's going to take tax credits to make this work, that they need to swallow this and move forward with the bill? I mean, you're getting an awful lot of opposition.
And we, conservatives and others, have said for a long, long time that we believe it's important to equalize the tax treatment for those purchasing coverage, gaining coverage through their employer, and those not. And the tax credit is the opportunity to be able to equalize that tax treatment.
The president himself handled the messaging after it was pointed out two of his big campaign promises, selling insurance across state lines and negotiating lower drug prices, weren't in this bill. The president tweeting, "Don't worry, getting rid of state lines, which will promote competition, will be in phase 2 and 3 of health care rollout. And I am working on a new system where there will be competition in the drug industry. Pricing for the American people will come way down."
All right, that's the first part of John Roberts' report on Fox. This is Sandy Rios. Couple of things about that. The new plan by the Republican leadership in the House is Obamacare light. There is no question about it. They are setting up a new entitlement system that will be extremely expensive. It is nothing more than nationalized health care with a few different details. And so there's going to be fierce opposition. And by the way, we will talk about that tomorrow a lot. But let me just say that President Trump is supporting it, and that's a bad thing because either you heaven knows, he probably doesn't fully understand because he's kind of got his head in other places. Let's just hope he doesn't, because this really is a huge new social welfare program, which is very much like Obamacare with different details. And so, again, we'll go into that in greater detail tomorrow. But the part I want to zero in and on, John, was the President Trump's staff is still scratching their heads about where in the world President Trump got that idea that he was being wiretapped. I want to talk about that for a second. I've told you before, I believe, many times, you cannot trust. You have to be careful about where you get your news. John Roberts is an establishment reporter. He came over, I think, from ABC, and he is very quick to ridicule the president on this issue almost every night in his reports. And so, in fact, let's listen to the second part. No, you know what? I don't want you to hear it anymore. It's enough. He spends the second part of his report ridiculing the notion that there could be any kind of wiretapping. And could I just say to you, I have in my hand the headline from the New York Times, and let me put my glasses on and I can actually read it because it's really tiny. It's dated Friday, January the 20th, and the headline of the story is "Wiretapped Data Used in Inquiry of Trump Aides." Wiretapped data used in inquiry of Trump aides. And so we know, I told you this yesterday, that the New York Times, the Washington Post have both reported on this. And I also told you that part of the problem here, according to J. Christian Adams, who joined us on Monday, is the use of the word wiretap. It's much broader than wiretap, much greater than wiretap. It is much broader than that. We're going to go into that in just a second. An NSA whistleblower, Bill Benny, 36-year veteran of the NSA, said that Trump is absolutely right to claim he was wiretapped and monitored. And then there's another part to this. I'm going to share that. I'm going to stop that just for a second. This is another part of the text from that New York Times article. This is what it said. In regard to the wiretapping of Trump's aides, it says the FBI, and this is out of that article from January, the FBI is leading the investigations aided by the National Security Agency, the CIA, and the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Unit. The investigators have accelerated their efforts in recent weeks, but have found no conclusive evidence of wrongdoing, the official said. One official said intelligence reports based on some of the wiretapped communications had been provided to the White House. What did Donald Trump tweet? He was being wiretapped and that Barack Obama had ordered it? And now it's like, oh, how could he say that? How could he possibly say that? But I'm going to stop, and I want you to hear a former analyst at the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency who served 4 years as the Deputy Director for Transportation Security and Anti-Terrorism Assistance Training and the Special Operations in the State Department's Office of Counterterrorism. His name is Larry Johnson, and I want you to hear what he said in an interview. Let's listen.
I think it's a huge deal. The problem is Trump probably shouldn't have done this via Twitter, because to call it that it was a wiretap is technically inaccurate. And the denials by the Obama people are like Bill Clinton asking what the meaning of is with respect to was oral sex a sexual act. In this case, I understand from very good friends that what happened was both Jim Clapper, John Brennan at CIA were intimately involved in trying to derail the candidacy of Donald Trump, that there was some collusion overseas with Britain's own GHCQ, that information that was gathered from GHCQ was actually passed to John Brennan, and it was disseminated within the U.S. government. This dissemination was illegal. Donald Trump is, in essence, correct that the intelligence agencies and some in the law enforcement community on the side of the FBI were, in fact, illegally trying to access, monitor his communications with his aides and with other people. All of this with an end to trying to destroy and discredit his presidency. I don't think there will be any doubt of that. I think it's worth noting that the head of the National Security Agency, an Admiral Rogers, made a journey to Trump Tower shortly after Trump had won. And in the immediate aftermath of his visit, Jim Clapper and others in the intelligence community called for him to be fired. Now, why did Rogers go to Trump Tower? My understanding is, let's call it, it was to cover himself, because he was aware that the NSA had been, the authorities had been misused and abused with respect to Donald Trump. So I think Trump's decision to go out this morning and tweet this was fully intended to send a notice and send word that I don't think he's doing this without evidence. He does have evidence. I think it was just inartfully expressed in the tweet.
All right, then Larry Johnson, again, former CIA, is asked about the Russian influence in the American election, and this is what he says.
Well, there is no evidence on the side of Russia meddling in the U.S. election. I saw that you had Brent Badowski on earlier, and I simply wish that you folks would ask him a very basic question. Ask him, what specifically did Russia do that influenced the U.S. election? The answer is nothing. Russia did not set up front companies. Russia did not provide money to the Trump campaign so that they could buy advertising. Russia was not providing advisors, direct or indirect, as cutouts to advise Trump on how to defeat Hillary Clinton. So the classic things that we would see, does Russia run intelligence operations against the United States? Yes. And does the United States do that against Russia? Yes. But this is an entirely, completely different matter. So I think what we're seeing here is, some think it's an exaggeration, but I do not. There is a genuine effort to try to take out and defeat Donald Trump, even in the aftermath of his election. And there are still senior people in jobs at the National Director of National Intelligence Office, the Office of the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, that these are senior intelligence executives that ought to be fired. That would be marched right out the door.
All right, that's Larry Johnson, again, former CIA and State Department. And he has one more thing to say. And I have to tell you, this comports with what people that I know who are part of these agencies or have been in the past have been warning about for weeks. Let's listen to his conclusion about this coordinated effort to keep Trump out of the White House.
No, listen, this is a coordinated, organized effort. The Obama, let's call them the Obama remnants, were really shocked that Trump won. So they had no clue coming down the road that he was going to win. Once he won, they genuinely thought that they could do things and plant information in the press that would put so much pressure on him that he would not be able to take the oath of office. And those efforts backfired. That was one of the reasons the so-called dossier on Trump's alleged misbehaviors in Russia was leaked. All of this was part of a coordinated, planned campaign by people that are linked to Barack Obama. Now, did Barack Obama pick up the telephone and tell Jim Clapper or John Brennan to do X, Y, and Z? No, I don't think that's the case. My understanding, though, is Obama did give the green light when he was briefed on information that had come from British GHCQ to U.S. intelligence officials, that he gave the green light to go ahead and try to start distributing and using that in an improper way. So this has to be, I think, done very methodically, because there are, I think, very well could be criminal charges brought against former members of the Obama administration for what they've done. What they're doing is, I think, would fall under the definition of sedition, which I realize sounds very alarmist. But the reality of what's going on is these are not isolated events generated by actions that have been taken by Donald Trump and his surrogates. These are actions that are being generated by opponents of Donald Trump trying to force actions out of the Trump team.
All right, that was Larry Johnson, and we will post that full interview on our Facebook page. I don't think you're going to be seeing that. It's published by RT, that's Russian television. But a friend of mine who is on the inside of things sent this, and he believes it's credible. So I believe Larry Johnson is credible, according to him. And so I want you to hear that. We'll post it, and you can share it. And now here's another pretty this will shake you up a bit. This is a blog post for Foreign Policy magazine written by a woman named Rosa Brooks, who's a former Obama administration official, in which she has outlined four ways to, quote, get rid of President Trump. First of all, she thinks that he should be declared mentally unfit, or she suggests that the military carry out a coup. And she lays it out in detail. By the way, she's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation, which is funded by billionaire George Soros Open Society. Now, here's the scary thing. General Mattis, who is part of Donald Trump's staff, is considering hiring Rosa Brooks, the former. He's considering hiring Rosa Brooks to work in the Trump White House. This is how bad things are. I tell you this today because we need you to pray. I want you to understand how serious it is. I want you to understand when you hear someone like John Roberts poo-poo it all, that you can't trust his reporting. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and he has a definite bias because he's in the media. And we're going to talk now about this WikiLeaks dump on the methods of the National Security Agency, or the CIA, and we'll talk about it with a former operative, so stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Oh, Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
The Pocket Testament League presents Pocket Power. Read, carry, and share the gospel every day. There's no easier way to share your faith than by giving someone a free gift, the Word of God in a compact, pocket-sized gospel.
At our summer festival, we handed out goodies and put a stack of gospels on the table. The next thing I knew, the gospels were gone. People are so hungry for God's Word.
This is Mike Brickley, president of the Pocket Testament League. League members have found that any place is a good place to share a pocket gospel with someone they meet. Join us and you'll always be ready. Is there anything more important?
We have a technology store and we place gospel books on the front counter where people check out. We encourage people to talk about their faith or to take a copy of the gospel with them.
What are you waiting for? Read, carry, and share the gospel every day. For more information, call 1-800-636-8785 or visit pocketpower.org. That's pocketpower.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Should little girls be afforded the right to privacy? That question's at the heart of the Texas Privacy Act. Lawmakers here are considering legislation that would keep men who identify as women out of the ladies' room and vice versa. Critics of the proposed law say it would lead to discrimination against transgender people. But supporters say it's about public safety and common sense. The bill would ensure that store owners have the freedom to determine their own bathroom policies, and it would block any public school from implementing a policy that allows boys to go into girls' bathrooms or locker rooms or showers. But transgender activists say forcing someone to use the bathroom based on the sex listed on their birth certificate is wrong. So we are left to ponder this question. Do grown men who identify as women have a constitutional right to shower alongside your little girl? I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The CIA can hack our televisions. This just one of the many revelations breaking from a new WikiLeaks dump of thousands of apparent CIA secrets. Fugitive Julian Assange and his secret-spilling organization has posted over 8,000 documents online, which they claim show how government spies can penetrate, infest, and control phones, computers, even self-driving cars. Experts say exposing tradecraft like this is a major blow.
When you lose this capability, which you will when your adversaries discover what you're doing, it's a real compromise and it's really damaging.
The CIA's Center for Cyber Intelligence is based in Langley. WikiLeaks say the documents were obtained from a, quote, isolated high-security network at the facility. The trove, bearing names such as Assassin and Medusa, had been circulated among former U.S. government hackers and contractors, one of whom, quote, recently gave the archive to WikiLeaks. Among the disclosures that some CIA hacking methods could be made to appear as if the hacks were perpetrated by other countries, including, as named in the documents, Russia. Apple was also supposedly targeted, amid claims the CIA has an entire division devoted to hacking Apple products, as well as the ability to bypass encrypted messages. A reminder that it took the government months to finally get into the San Bernardino shooter's iPhone. If this intel is legit, and analysts believe it is, it would be another hit to the U.S. intelligence community, courtesy of WikiLeaks.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was Benjamin Hall of Fox News last night. This is a huge story, and it's so interesting. You know, it comes on the heels. What? The news is coming out so fast. It was just, what, Saturday, Sunday morning that Donald Trump tweeted that he was being wiretapped by, had been wiretapped by the former president, and we've been hearing nothing about nothing but that, lots of that. I've been talking about it a lot. And now we hear this information being leaked, this dangerous details of the methods and operations of the Central Intelligence Agency being leaked today. Now, what's this all about? Well, first of all, we have to talk about what the effect on our country is. And then we have to think, what are the motives of the person leaking? Because according to Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, this is a person inside. Only a person inside could have the ability to do this kind of leaking. I've asked Fred Flights to join us this morning because Fred is a former CIA analyst. I worked on the House Intelligence Committee, and he also was an aide, I guess I'll just say aide-de-camp. I'll make up a title for former Ambassador John Bolton. And Fred is very knowledgeable, and you've heard him talk with me before, and I just wanted to know what he thought about all this. So, Fred, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good to be here.
Fred, this must have been pretty shocking. Did you know this was coming?
I didn't, and it really makes me angry that this cowardly traitor would compromise all these methods that the CIA was using. And I mean, these are things we're using against terrorists and against China, against Russia. Systems like this cost billions of dollars to develop, and we've just taught our enemies what we're able to do. And these systems and methods are now going to be rendered useless. Our country is much less safe because some cowardly traitor took the law into his or her own hands and released all this information.
You know, Fred, I know that there's no way of knowing this, but I still have to ask because I find myself wondering, you know, is this person an enemy of our state? Or is this a person who, this is the questions we're asking about Snowden, is this a person who thinks he's in some way helping Donald, in some ways this is a smaller story for sure, I think, but helping Donald Trump and these claims about wiretapping? Can you possibly give any insight on that?
I don't think it's related to Trump. I think this is a disgruntled individual who should not have been hired by the CIA, whether as an employee or as a contractor. I blame John Brennan for this, the former CIA director. First of all, I don't know why the CIA had a cyber shop like this in the first place. There's three other ones in the government. They should have done it at NSA. We know Brennan lowered standards for hiring to make the CIA more diverse. And I think that may have allowed characters like Snowden to get into the CIA to work in this organization. I think this has to be investigated.
You know, Fred, I just was thinking, my husband and I were actually reflecting on this. All of this stuff has happened under the Obama administration. And yet his name is never mentioned except by Trump over the weekend as being in the mix or any way responsible for any of this leaking. We had, Chelsea Manning. And 2010, we had Edward Snowden. I mean, we've had a rupture of our intelligence agencies. We have John Brennan appointed by Barack Obama, who you just mentioned. And by the way, Fred, I don't think it's a small thing that John Brennan actually confessed in and laughed that he had voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980 for president in the United States. And he laughed because he was afraid he might not pass the security check, background check, and he was trying to encourage others not to apply because, look, I voted for the Communist Party candidate and I'm the head of the CIA. That's what he was saying. There's no exaggeration there. That in itself is alarming, don't you think?
I think Brennan was a terrible choice for CIA director. This is the story of someone who was able to get to the top of the agency because he took some high-level jobs at the NSC working for Al Gore, and he used this to sort of jump ahead in the career ladder. He really didn't earn the position he got. He was bumped up because of his connections. there's other people who have done that also recently. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that the new CIA director is going to be careful with this kind of thing and don't let people parlay the connections with the White House to get ahead. Let me mention one other thing. We learned from the Snowden scandal that huge amounts of information like this can't be available to one person. It has to be compartmented. It's just outrageous that CIA did not learn from the Snowden scandal. And the fact that they must have put all these documents in the same computer file or program that anyone could download. I'm just wondering, did they learn nothing from the Snowden scandal?
You know, I was reading this is going to be, I won't have the right language or words for this, but basically the description from WikiLeaks was that this was a group, this information was given to a group of hackers who regularly try to hack into American national security apparatus, and that one of those persons passed this information on to WikiLeaks. But you do wonder, you know, if that's the case, Fred, now that we know all that CIA, well, we know at least some, and this is just the beginning. They're going to be dumping more documents. We know the capabilities of the CIA. Why wouldn't it be actually easy to find this person?
I think we will be able to find this person. I don't think that many people had access to all this information. I think there's probably clues that can be found. A related problem here is that it's hard to find people who know how to do hacking, who can pass the CIA's rigorous security requirements. So I think we lowered our standards, not just for diversity reasons, but to get people like Snowden in the door to help with hacking operations. You know what? If you let people like Snowden in, this is going to happen.
You know, one thing that's been pointed out as we have discussed, you know, the Donald Trump's allegations, which I believe are true, may not be wiretapping exactly, but surveillance, surely. The New York Times reported it January 20th. They talked about wiretapping the president's staff. So, and we know that, you know, Michael Flynn was at Trump Tower when he was, his conversations were monitored, and on it goes. So it's really not a stunning claim. But my question is that in the course of that discussion, people said, and I'm sure you're well aware, Fred, because this has been your life, that when the national security apparatus is turned on your own people, that's when it becomes a police state. I would love your perspective on that. You've been with the CIA a number of years. Did you see a shift that you were concerned about?
That's why this whole scandal concerning Trump is so troubling. It appears that Barack Obama used the power of our U.S. intelligence agency against the presidential candidate of another party to make sure that candidate lost and the Democratic candidate won, and continued this effort to undermine this candidate after he won the election. When our intelligence agencies were set up, there were ironclad rules set down that these agencies cannot be used to collect against Americans unless there is an extraordinary reason which requires court approval. And I think it's pretty clear here that there was wiretapping, if not of Trump, but of his people. And then they had this intensive interest, surprising intensive interest, in collecting information about Russian officials looking for information, really, for their interaction with the Trump officials, which they could then leak.
You know, I've heard discussions, and I'd like to know your thoughts about this, sort of being bandied about that there is a sort of a coup, a silent coup taking place in the intelligence agencies. This long before this thing over the weekend broke, that there are so many people in those particular NSA, CIA, and just fill in the blanks, the rest of them, during the past 8 years have been so populated with leftists and people who these are my words, are really, I think, enemies of this state. I really do. But at least, at the very least, they hate Donald Trump, and that there is an active effort to destroy his presidency, if not destroy him. Do you think that's an overstatement?
Well, I don't quite look at it that way. From my time in government, when I worked in the Bush State Department, it was pretty clear that the careerists wanted to undermine Bush and do what they could to stop him. They felt they were the permanent bureaucracy. They wanted to outlast Don Bolton and all the Republicans. We know there's more leaks during Republican administrations than Democrats because the federal bureaucracy tilts to the left. I don't like the deep state idea because that gives it too much it gives the idea that there's some type of conspiracy, like Oliver Stone talked about in the movie JFK, this organized effort to subvert government. I think there are a lot of embedded liberals who are undermining Trump. I think they'd be there anyway because the government tells to the left. And I think Trump can solve this by putting his people in place. He has to populate the entire government with his people. That way, we can get the government operating the way it's supposed to, and we can find, and if not fire, at least reassign the people who've been doing the leaking.
Fred, when I've been looking at this broader, you know, not broader, but the area of Donald Trump's claiming about being surveilled, and I was reading some background stuff about how Barack Obama used wiretapping, you know, on Angela Merkel, on Berlusconi of Italy. And you wrote an article reminding us of how the NSA, ordered by the White House, used their abilities to target Benjamin Netanyahu. Can you say a word about that?
Well, concerning Merkel, this was routine collection against a foreign leader. I actually don't fault Obama for that. This is just something that the U.S. government does. But concerning Netanyahu, this was very interesting. NSA reportedly came across intercepted conversations mentioning Netanyahu and U.S. senators and American Jewish organizations concerning the Iran deal. And they asked the White House, should we disseminate this because it mentions U.S. senators? And the White House said, well, you know, we're not going to tell you to disseminate. We've got to tell you not to disseminate it. You decide on your own, sort of wink, wink. And it was disseminated. This is the kind of stuff that's never supposed to be released. There's actually a rule. Intercepts that mention U.S. senators are not to be released. They're to be destroyed unless there is a very compelling national security reason to do otherwise. So I think there really is something there concerning the Netanyahu intercepts.
And you also talked about how that after it became public that the president had ordered, well, that there were wiretapping. Checking, listening in the phones of Angela Merkel and other world leaders. There was such a backlash that allegedly President Obama ordered them to stop monitoring, except for Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah,
I think that's interesting.
That interesting.
Yes, it is. By the way, this is an article you wrote back in 2015, which I think is interesting. And we'll put this on our Facebook page so people can write it. Read it. It's just another example of the invasiveness. Now, Fred, as you think about this next, we just have a few minutes left here. As you think about this next release from WikiLeaks, I mean, one has to ask, what more? I understand that the names were redacted, at least, in this particular dump. I guess, thank God for that. But what do you expect in this next one?
Well, I understand that there's a lot that WikiLeaks did not release. They did not release the code of some of the programs that CIA allegedly had developed to hack into Android phones and Apple phones, et cetera. So I don't know if that's going to be next. It seems like whenever there's a big leak from WikiLeaks, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Okay. So what effect do you think this is having on the agency? I'm sure you still have friends, relationships. I'm sure you do. What effect is it having on them? Yeah, that's the question.
It's really bad for morale. It's going to undermine a program which, as I said, I'm not sure why CIA is doing this, but it's certainly going to undermine it. But I'm hoping it is going to increase the pressure on the CIA director to really clean house. Find out who it was who hired the people in this cyber office. Find out if the people there are competent and qualified. And initiate reforms to really streamline the CIA to make it more effective and less political.
Well, that's a great optimistic note to leave on. And heaven knows we need some optimism this morning. Fred Vleitz, again, former CIA analyst. He's with the Center for Security Policy now. And we're going to put his article, which was written in National Review on December of 2015. Did the White House use the NSA to spy on Congress about the Iran deal? Very interesting read. Fred, thanks for joining me this morning, and see you soon.
Good to be here. Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you, Fred. All right, this is Sandy Rios coming back with lots more, so don't you touch that dial.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Did you know there are 9,000 year-round volunteers serving with Operation Christmas Child nationwide? That's right, and local teams are still growing as God calls new volunteers to directly connect with His global purposes. As part of a local team, how would you like to invest your time, skills, and passions so that millions of children can receive a gift of love and a message of hope? To learn more about volunteer opportunities in your area or to apply, visit SamaritansPurse.org/volunteerwithOCC.
Nothing but truth. It's Crane Durham's Corner of the World, where hard-hitting questions are asked.
People are going to be looking for answers.
And he's heard here, only on American Family Radio.
America needs to be restored to our fundamental foundation, which benefits us all.
From economics and national security to life and marriage, you'll hear the top stories of the day. Experience nothing but truth for yourself. Weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. North Korea has once again muscled its way to the forefront of the national security agenda of the United States and its allies in the Western Pacific. The salvo of ballistic missiles that Pyongyang recently fired into Japanese waters is the latest reminder that what is arguably the planet's most erratic and dangerous regime is becoming more capable of attacking our forces, friends, and homeland by the day. The Trump administration responded to the latest provocation by promptly deploying a missile defense system to South Korea that has long been needed but until now not accepted. This is a necessary but not sufficient response. 34 years ago this month, Ronald Reagan recognized that America and its allies would need effective missile defenses. Donald Trump has promised to field the state of the art. This urgently requires a new team and fresh approach at the Pentagon. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
When millions marched across the country for women's rights the day after President Trump took office, it was likely the largest single-day demonstration ever recorded in U.S. history. Now, nearly halfway into his first 100 days, the same group that organized the women's march is preparing to strike.
This is an important message regarding the closing of all ACPS schools this Wednesday.
Alexandria City Public Schools in Virginia is one of two school districts that will be closed tomorrow in response to this Day Without Women. A voicemail that went out yesterday to a Fox News employee, as well as all parents with kids in the district, explains that more than 300 staff members have requested Wednesday off.
The decision is based solely on our ability to provide sufficient staff to cover all of our classrooms. It is not based on a political stance or position.
The strike's organizers insist that it's not necessarily a protest against President Trump.
We need America to feel what a day without a woman would feel like.
But critics of the strike aren't buying it, especially since the Conservative Media Research Center claims that liberal billionaire George Soros has donated millions to their partners. Not to mention, nearly 76% of Alexandria's residents voted for Hillary Clinton.
I mean, this is a district that overwhelmingly voted for Hillary Clinton. So I think that, you know, they're just so steeped in anti-Donald Trumpism that they would be very quick to pull the plug on school in order to enable their teachers to miss a day of work.
Pulling the plug in Alexandria means that 15,000 students will be staying home from school tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's definitely elitist. And I think this disproportionately hurts single moms who rely on the educational system and public schools in particular in order to watch their kids while they're able to go to school.
Organizers say the school closures were not expected and that if you can't afford to strike, don't.
There are many ways you can be in solidarity with women. You can wear red on tomorrow. You can shop in women-owned businesses. And, you know, there are many ways to show your solidarity without putting your job on the line.
But critics argue that it's not about those who can't afford to strike. It's about those who can't afford for others to strike.
Sandy Rios with you. That was a really good report from Kristen Fisher. Really good. From my perspective, today is the day without a woman, a day without a woman. I'm sorry, but I am distressed. I'm also laughing. I'm thinking that might be really good news for some people, a day without a woman. So Alexandria School System, you heard that story. They're shutting down. Their teachers now can go out and march. And this is, again, organized by the same group that organized the Women's March. And ladies, gentlemen, I can't speak to you, wear whatever you want to today, but girls, don't wear red. It's one of my favorite colors for wardrobe, but don't wear it today because red will identify you with this A Day Without a Woman communist effort funded by George Soros. Some people having fun with this. I think I might too. Here's a tweet I just got. Keep calm. Mommy's a commie. I actually love that. And this is, I mean, this is absolute agitprop. It is a control of the masses and dumb Americans who have no education. Yeah, I made a broad, blanket, unkind statement. Don't know any better than to just Heil Hitler or follow whatever. Just tell me what to do. I'll read from the playbook. I'll stand up, sit down, turn my back. Whatever you want me to do, that's what I'll do. Isn't it great? I mean, I've seen this. I just saw it. The last time I was in a communist country was in North Korea. And I watched as they marched in lockstep in perfect precision, mindless robots doing what the great authorities were teaching them to do. This is what totalitarian regimes do. So now the women are going out. We're going to wear red. And let me just say a couple things more about women. In fact, a feminist bookstore is turning all of their male-authored books around on the shelves. So it's in Cleveland. It's here's what a bookstore would look like with no male authors. And so they turned all their books around so that it would just be women's books that would be featured in their bookstore. And so it's silly. It's silly, but it's serious. You know, it's silly, but it's dangerous. This is when you read Big Brother and about Big Brother in Orwell's 1984, and you think, oh, that would never happen. Oh, man. If only people somehow had gotten smarter and were more independently thoughtful, had minds of their own, knew how to critically think, if only. Let me just say one more thing, then I'm going to morph to a different story to illustrate the same point. Ivanka Trump, remember Ivanka, Donald Trump's daughter? Remember she has a clothing line? Remember that Nordstrom's took it out of their shelves? Remember that Neiman Marcus did also? Employees of TJ Maxx and Marshalls were instructed to throw away any signage advertising her wares. Well, this from The Hill this morning, Ivanka Trump clothing line reports record sales. Since the beginning of February, they were some of the best performing weeks in the history of the brand. And so this is my suggestion to those of you women who agree with me. Don't wear red today and go shop Ivanka Trump. And, all right. So, I was making the point that people have become mindless robots. And I want to tell you another story that came out. We'll put this on our Facebook page right up front. I'll tell you, this was on The Blaze this morning. Liberal prof protesting thug assaulted me after student shutdown of conservative author's talk. So here's the story. Charles Murray, who is an author, he wrote a book called The Bell Curve. He's a conservative writer. He's an older gentleman, gray hair, very distinguished looking, kind of, you know, certainly not bombastic. And he was invited to speak by the, I believe, the student group for the Competitive Enterprise Institute at Vermont's Middlebury College. So there was a whole video of this thing, and I watched quite a bit of it. I watched the opening. And then there is a liberal female professor who decides that she will, she doesn't agree with him, but she will offer him the, she will help escort him and introduce him to the crowd. Well, Charles Murray takes the podium, and immediately the students in the auditorium turn their backs on him, and then they hold up signs, expect resistance, and this is how it sounded. I want you to hear what they said. These are students, your children, my children, in America's colleges and universities who happen to be at Vermont's Middlebury College. Let's listen.
What is most important must be spoken, made verbal and shared, even at the risk of having it bruised or misunderstood. Death is the final silencing tool, and so many voices and lives have already been taken in the name of eugenics and the promise of democracy.
Who is the enemy?
White supremacy!
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 All right, so in case you didn't catch all that, they're reading a statement together that sounds completely like something out of a communist playbook. It was amazing to me as I listened to them read it in unison, you know, all kinds of kids from all kinds of homes. Here's Charles Murray standing up on the podium as a gentleman, just standing there in his suit, kind of probably 70 years old, I'm guessing. He's standing there. He'd already said something about this will probably be anticlimactic, but they didn't let him speak at all. Turned their backs and start shouting this, reciting first this propaganda garbage. One of the lines was, death is the final silencing, and as a final silencing tool. And then they start shouting, who is the enemy? White supremacy. That's what they're shouting. Who is the enemy? White supremacy. Then they go through xenophobic, homophobic, and, you know, all the phobics, all the groups, because that's important in college campuses. In fact, you'll, if you listen to the tape, you'll, or this, watch it, the video of it, you will see one of the professors at the beginning get up and make a lot out of people groups and how she's not there to offend them and how she disagrees with Charles Murray. She doesn't want anybody to misunderstand that she might agree with him. She just, you know, they're letting this group, you know, Competitive Enterprise Institute students group, invite this person to speak. But boy, she doesn't agree. Oh, no. We want it. We are not homophobic, xenophobic. I mean, it's amazing the links she goes to, all the buzzwords. And so this is, they go on for a very, very long time. We just did made a very short clip for you. But here's what happened. Alison Stanger, a Middlebury political science professor, Democrat, wrote on Facebook. She said, she described, I want you to know what it feels like to look out at a sea of students yelling obscenities at other members of my beloved community. There were students and faculty who wanted to hear the exchange but were unable to do so, either because of the screaming and chanting and chair pounding in the room or because their seats were occupied by those who refused to listen and they were stranded outside the doors. I saw some of my faculty colleagues who had publicly acknowledged that they had not read anything Dr. Murray had written join the effort to shut down the lecture. All of this was deeply unsettling to me. What alarmed me most, however, was what I saw in student eyes from up on that stage. Those who wanted the event to take place made eye contact with me. Those intent on disrupting it steadfastly refused to do so. It was clear to me that they had effectively dehumanized me. They couldn't look me in the eye because if they had, they would have seen another human being. There is a lot to be angry about in America today, but nothing good ever comes from demonizing our brothers and sisters. Now, one point about that, Alison Stanger is right about that, and this is how we know totalitarian regimes whip the populace up to eventually kill the people that they deem icky, or the outside ones, or the undesirables, or the deplorables, according to Hillary Clinton. They dehumanize them, and that's what makes them able then to do the horrible things that they then do to them, whether it was Pol Pot in that regime or it was the Nazis to the Jews. They dehumanized them. They were, I remember even in Nazi Germany, people who were disabled and not able to work were called useless eaters. They were dehumanized, and that's what set the foundation for the carnage that took place later. But that's not all of this. So Alison Stanger, eventually has to escort Charles Murray off the stage. And they had a private exit they had already designed in case there was a problem, but they had no idea. There were two large security guards, and capable, so the writing says here, seems that among the mob, a big man with a sign was standing right in front of us and wasn't going to let us pass, Charles Murray said. Their only option was walking right toward the guy as the security guard pushed him aside. The three of us got in the car with the security guards keeping protesters away while we closed and locked the doors. Then we found that the evening wasn't over. So many protesters surrounded the car, banging on the sides and the windows and rocking the car, climbing onto the hood. And then they ended up going to a restaurant, they thought. They took sort of a circuitous route to get there, but they found out where they were, and they were warned they couldn't come, they shouldn't come. So they decided to go out of town. But what happened in the process is that Alison Stanger got attacked. She was shoved, and her hair was pulled, and she ended up going to the emergency room diagnosed with a concussion. That's the liberal professor who was simply escorting Charles Murray. This is an amazing story. And I didn't even tell you all of it. We will put this on our Facebook page. This is another example of the takeover of the left of our kids' minds. And as you can read, Alison Stanger, the professor, the liberal professor, who got a concussion as a result of this, said it was professors in the audience she saw participating. It wasn't just the kids. It was the professors. This is more of the same. You know this, right? We've talked about it plenty. You know about it experientially, but we need to do something. That puts kind of some life on the interview I did a couple of weeks ago. It's the National Association of Scholars, and they're trying to propose an act for higher education that would take care a lot of the funding and of the rules on college campuses and of the professors and what they can and cannot do. And it's a great proposal. So there are some practical things that can happen, but somebody has to take action. We can't allow this, and we are really in a fight for our lives. And so I need to say that God is involved, as Benjamin Franklin said. He said, the longer I live, the more convinced I am that God dwells in the affairs of men. He does dwell in the affairs of men. He does care about this. And I think he gave us some respite from Hillary Clinton, who I think is a Marxist leftist, and it would have been no doubt outright persecution for people of faith. So now we have another phase that we thought maybe it was going to be over easily. It's not. It's not. And so we must be steadfast. You know, you cannot give up. We cannot give up. We're not going to. And I don't think God's going to give up yet either. We just need to cry out to him and ask for his help and ask him what he wants us to do today. Meanwhile, girls, don't wear red. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.